Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrade the networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, July 30th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking about last week's large comic convention, Comic-Con, in San Diego. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. And I'll give out that information again, nice and slow, in about a half an hour when I invite your participation. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta, and Miles Elam, Programmer and Student of American Literature. Welcome, geeks, to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Sean, you did go to Comic-Con last week, and we're going to talk all about that in a few minutes. But first, let's do some geek news. Miles?
Francis Crick, the discoverer of the structure of DNA, has passed away at a ripe old age. He's one of the most influential scientists of all time, shifted research efforts from molecular biology to neuroscience in his later years, with a particular interest in the question of neural basis of consciousness.
You know, I love the idea that this guy that, you know, basically figured out the molecular structure of DNA, which is, you know, in itself pretty monumental, and he actually did it with a cohort, and they got, of course, a Nobel Prize for it, and it's, you know, pretty amazing, then just dropped that field completely and went into neurology. That's that's pretty cool. All right. Thank you very much for that update. Sad news for science. Sean?
Yeah, Microsoft has released a major update for Microsoft Office 2003 this week. Service Pack 1 for Office 2003 is now available at Microsoft's update site, and it contains a series of bug fixes and stability improvements, although they don't specifically say what they are. Typically, a service pack contains a large number of fixes, so if you've been keeping up to date up till now, you probably are going to be okay, but if you haven't, you might want to grab the service pack because it'll contain all of the previous bugs.
Now, how do you get the service pack?
Well, you go to, I think it's windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and once you're there, that's where you update Windows. And then from that screen, up at the top, there in the menu area, there is a Microsoft Office.
Okay.
So basically, it's windowsupdate.microsoft.com.
And then look for the Windows Update link at the very top.
Yeah, the Office Update.
Office Update. Okay.
And it just says, Office Update, and then follow the directions.
And this is for people that have Office 2003.
Right. So if you're just updating, if you're just using the Windows Update from the main page, that's updating Windows. That's not updating Office. So to get up Office Update, you have to click on that Office Update link at the top.
All right. Good. Thank you very much, Sean. Miles?
Copyright apparently is being enforced by the Patriot Act now.
What?
Federal charges were filed against Adam McGoffey, the creator of the popular SG1archive.com website. Basically, what had happened was the Motion Picture Association of America had used the Patriot Act, certain copyright provisions of the Patriot Act, to be able to subpoena records from his ISP to find out who he was, to then later on file charges for copyright infringement.
Because
he has a fan site.
Okay.
But they were using the Patriot Act to enforce copyright law, as opposed to enforcing it for terrorism.
So a copyright law, which is not a terrorist terrorist thing, was the crime in case, and they wanted to get him on that. So they used the rights of the Patriot Act to get to his data.
Right.
Now, that's got to be thrown out, right? I mean, doesn't the Patriot Act pretty clear that it's for the purposes of...
The Patriot Act is simply a matter of law. The intention may be for terrorism, but if something is written down as codified in law, you have a problem there.
I don't like that. Thank you, Miles, for that. Sean?
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's been following the Apple iPod story.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it.
With Real Networks. Now, I don't have an iPod, although I must say...
You don't have an Apple either.
I don't have an Apple, but... Okay. More and more, I'm wanting an iPod.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
It's amazing.
The iPod is a portable MP3 or music listening device that has a storage capacity.
Right.
Okay.
And I would just love to put it in my car and swap iPods, CDs all the time.
And the iPod's made by Apple, but it's compatible with multiple operating systems.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
It's compatible with multiple operating systems, but its songs are only compatible with its own iPod device. So if you're trying to use other songs from other... people who are selling
software
on the network, software, yeah, especially from Real Networks, maybe using their Harmony software. Apple doesn't like that. So what's happened is Real Networks Harmony allows songs sold via their Real Networks online store to be played on a bunch of portable devices, and one of those is Apple's iPod.
Even though Apple didn't give them a development kit for it.
Correct. Apple does not license their technology to other companies. So... doing this, Apple is basically accusing them of called them a hacker.
Right. Now, which we don't think it was really a bad term necessarily, but now let's talk a little bit about what is happening. You know, iPods play MP3 files, so that's just a standard thing. They just play MP3 files. And anybody that produces MP3
files,
they
play MP3 files.
Right.
But MP3 files are disappearing now because...
And the issue is the copyright.
Because the RIAA is really... Right. Cracking down on those sites, so the only place you can get music are these various
selling sites, and Real has
and
one.
They all use proprietary algorithms to encode the music,
so that you can't do duplications of them.
Yeah,
right. So Real Network has the same kind of store, and you buy stuff, but you can't copy it. And the system they use, the application is called Harmony.
Right.
So now what they're doing is they're allowing the iPod to play that that non-copyable file format.
Yeah. And now Apple is saying, hey, we didn't license. We didn't give you what you need to
right.
play that. You're finding a way around
right.
Our intellectual property.
Isn't it kind of equivalent to somebody producing an app operating system for an Apple computer?
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because now Apple is investigating implications of Real's strategy under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Right.
Real has fired back, actually, and talked about how they're doing something that's not unusual for the industry.
Right,
they
right.
have a lot of precedent for what's going on.
Right, but this is a big test about two large corporations fighting out and using the Digital Copyright Act, talking about, well, is it legal for you to develop software for hardware that you didn't create?
Right.
And that's kind of the issue at hand.
That's the issue. Real Networks, basically, as Miles said, contends that customers, not Apple, should be the ones controlling which music files can be played on their iPods.
Right. Well, it's interesting. And, of course, now Apple does have auto updates for their iPod that increase different stuff. And I'm sure that they'll be trying to...
Apple is actually threatening that the next time they update their software, they're going to lock out Harmony.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I wish... I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I like the idea of two corporations going at it instead of a corporation going at an individual that makes a hack to hardware to do something special.
Right.
Like the Xbox stuff that's been happening. Thank you very much for that. Miles?
Been a tough... week for internet sites. Google was taken down by the latest My Doom variant.
Interesting. I've never known Google to actually have a serious problem like that. I guess no one's done
right.
it.
And on Monday, Google was returning back 503s, service unavailable. And it took everyone by surprise, because you're right, Google never goes down.
So what was it, DOS that the worm did on it?
Basically, yeah.
Okay, so this variant of My Doom was installed on people's computers, and it was trying to find email addresses, from what I hear. And it was using Google to try to find email addresses. So
right.
since as the worm propagated, thousands and thousands of these copies were asking for queries from Google. And that traffic of keep on asking for Google queries caused Google service to not be available for people.
Right.
And that's normally called a denial of service attack, though they weren't intending for this Google to go down.
Well, a lot of denial of service attacks actually end up being that way, where it's not necessarily intentional.
Right.
A similar thing, well, not a similar thing, but another denial of service attack also hit DoubleClick a couple days ago, where it was the advertising company. Most of the time when you see an ad banner at the top of a web page, that's through DoubleClick, or at least 75% of the time. They do 75% of advertising on websites. Their domain name server services were taken down by denial of service attacks.
So yeah, that was probably intentional.
Most likely. There are a lot of people who do not like DoubleClick over the years.
Now, back with the Google thing. The reason why the worm was using Google to search is that lots of times email addresses are on web pages, and email addresses are on mail lists that then get archived on the web pages. Mm-hmm. And basically what's happening is these worms want to collect email addresses. This system wanted to collect email addresses to send out the worm, or possibly send out viruses, or possibly just to collect the email addresses and then sell them to people. So the kind of the moral of the story for individuals is, if you can go do an email, a search in Google to find your email address, get it removed from the page that it's on. Because the more it's out there, the more spam you'll get, the more viruses you'll get.
Yeah. The idea is don't put your bare email address onto a web page.
Which is problematic if you want to advertise your business. Info at is a really normal thing to put on a web page.
So maybe we should talk about how we've gotten around that. And there are various ways of getting
around
that.
Actually, every week we talk about you can call into GeekSpeak or you can go up online and fill out a web form. And the reason we do that is that if we give out the email address online, which the Geek's email address is geeks at geekspeak.org, but if we put that on the internet, people will find it, viruses will find it and be sending it to us, and spam will be sent to us. So we try to hide the email address a little bit, and we have a web form up there that you fill out yourself, and it then emails to us discreetly without the email address ever being published.
There's not so much people finding it. It's spiders, right?
It's spiders, yeah. It's about...
They're automated little pieces of software that go out and find it.
That's right.
So if you were to maybe say, you can send an email at geeks at, like, AT, at geekspeak.org.
The thing is, these searching bots are getting really smart. They'll look at the wording and they'll find, oh, well, this looks like a domain name. So before that, does it have the word at or something that's like that? Oh, okay, it does. Then put it back together. So you have to be smarter than the checker will be. And basically, any...
Send an email to geeks at this, this website.
At this URL website or something like that. Another way to do it is using JavaScript and getting kind of complicated. But in general, if there's a simple way you do kind of encoding and hiding the email address, like adding the word spam in it, then eventually someone will write a little script that will find your email address anyway and pull that fake data out. So there's really nothing you can do. One great thing is an image. You put an image of your name, and then search bots can't detect an image to get the email address. So that's a good way to do it.
A little text image.
But you can't make it clickable. So in any case, is that it for that story, Miles?
That's it for that story.
Okay. Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, there's it's a really cool story, actually. Researchers have developed a shark repellent, which has got to make, what was his name? Who played Bruce Wayne? Who played Batman in the original?
Michael Keaton.
No. The TV show.
Oh, Adam West.
Adam West. Remember the old Batman shark repellent? Well, there really is shark repellent now. Eric Stroud, a chemist and co-founder of New Jersey-based Oak Ridge Shark Lab, has used what are called semiochemicals, which are messengers used in natural behavior and communication between individuals, kind of like pheromones, to develop a repellent that basically turns a shark from...
interested in killing.
Interested in killing, interested in fighting, into running away, flighting.
Cool.
So
it's shark repellent.
So what they're hoping is that they can make this, if it's effective and it proves to be environmentally safe, it could be standard issue for anyone that comes in contact with predators.
Cool.
So if you see a
bunch
Batman's of sharks,
just knows what's going on.
Yeah, he's way ahead of his time, obviously.
A very specific predator, anyway.
That's true. Very specific predator. It's kind of hard to... Well, speaking of Batman, Miles?
Oh, that Batman Begins.
A new movie.
Is under production. Just came across it yesterday and looked at the teaser trailer.
And the actors?
Is Christian Bale as Bruce Wayne.
Or Batman.
Right.
And
the other actors in there, like Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman. And
who's Morgan Freeman playing?
Lucius Fox, a businessman who really does the day-to-day operations of Wayne Industries. Yeah.
Cool. It should be
it
a great...
very much closer to the original comic book stories, or the Dark Knight comic book.
I think his name is Kevin Watanabe, who played the head of the Klan in The Last Samurai.
Okay.
Which was a movie with Tom Cruise. He plays Ra's al Ghul, which is one of Batman's greatest nemesis. And the guy who played in 28 Days Later, I don't know his name, plays the Scarecrow.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that in 2005.
2005, okay. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. We're doing the Geek News. Sean, to you.
Yeah, well, Intel has announced that the 4 gigahertz Pentium 4 will not be available until the first quarter of 2005.
That's quite a delay.
Yeah, and it seems that it has to do with possibly employees, I guess. So CEO Craig Barrett issued an email to employees warning of the urgent need to tighten manufacturing and operations at Intel. So it's a delay. I don't know specifically what it was. I did read his email, and he really does seem like he's really upset.
It's interesting for a leader to kind of get mad at the employees.
Now, he's basically saying, you work here, you have to take responsibility.
Interesting. Apple's having trouble releasing their newest stuff that they haven't actually released yet due to processor problems at higher speeds. Now, they're much slower than Intel. And now Intel's top of the line, if you will, processor that was due out this year is being delayed for a year.
Yeah.
It looks like we're finally kind of running into that thing we're talking about all the time of it's really hard to make processors faster and faster and faster.
It is. And I don't think it's so difficult to make them. They're finally getting the 90 nanometer technology down. The problem is getting them to run effectively without burning up. So I think what's happening is when they go to the fab and they make these processors, the yield, or it's the number of usable processors, is so small it's not enough to sell,
right.
Really. Can't productize it. So it's not, Apple uses IBM, and IBM's got some pretty cutting-edge technology. They're using strained silicon where they actually stretch the molecules so that the electricity can flow better. Yeah, they're using technologies like a silicon on insulator where they add an insulating layer between the transistor layers so that leakage doesn't occur. Leakage is
right.
It's like when you're in a room and you
we're going way too far.
You dim your lights and you still see a little light. That's what's happening at the transistor level, except now it's happened that you're seeing a lot of light.
Right.
So there's so much power leaking. It's basically it makes the processor run too hot.
Okay, so Intel's having the same problem.
Yeah,
looks like
AMD.
Right.
Everyone is.
Everybody is. Okay, thank you, Sean, for that. Miles, you have something to say, sir?
Yes, Microsoft has issued a let's see, what's the term for it again? I'm sorry, an out of cycle patch for IE. We had reported earlier that they were going to be doing a monthly security patches. Well, they're doing another one that's out of that cycle, more pertinent, just because there's a bug in IE that needs to be fixed.
And has that patch been released?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that's
a patch for download.jack attack.
Okay, another one that you'll find at windowsupdate.microsoft.com, part of the standard installation of Windows Update. Miles, thank you for that. We did get a call from Matthew. He wants to know how to build his own laptop. He's built his own PC. You guys have any ideas for building your own laptop? I think I'm pretty much at a, no, that's not one of the things you do.
There's a company I know of that has done something like that, or it's very componentized, where you can really mix and match what you do. They're also fairly pricey.
They're really thick. I mean, the big thing about laptops is that people engineer them so they're just as small as possible. They all jam into next to each other, and that's a lot of engineering time. And to do that yourself, you're going to have problems with cooling and the same problems that companies do. Basically, laptops aren't really in that easy-to-build category. I don't have any recommendations except for, find Google, do some Google searches on homemade laptops and see if anyone else has done it and what their suggestions are. But I'd go ahead and buy one, personally. News story, Sean?
Yeah, new TV TiVo recorders are coming out. They're based on the Series 2 recorder, except these come with DVD burning capabilities. So Pioneer has already had one out that burns Plus R and Dash R, but it looks like TiVo is going more with the Dash R. But there's another company called Humax, which is going to start building these devices as well. So that's the next generation of TiVo burning DVDs.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into our topic of the day now. Comic-Con last week, Sean, you wrote up quite a few articles, took a lot of pictures of Comic-Con, went around the floor. And Comic-Con, of course, is the largest comic convention. It happened in San Diego last week.
Right.
And you can see a whole bunch of pictures right now if you want to follow along. If you're online, go to geekspeak.org, and the first three stories there, the articles are Sean's write-ups from last night. about Comic-Con and images of the trade show and a little bit of the stuff we'll be talking about right now. So, Sean, what was your general take on it? Did you enjoy the event?
Oh, yeah. It was great. It's huge. This year is the first time it's taken up the entire San Diego Convention Center.
That's big.
Which runs from Hall A through Hall H. And it's something on the order of 460,000 square feet of floor space. So, yeah, it's really big. This year they figured that there were over 700 exhibitors. Some of them were quite large. Lucasfilm had 90 booths.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I mean, every major studio was there.
Now, this is about comics, right? But movies.
Oh, the movie business is huge. In fact, I bet you every studio had their research and development teams. In fact, they call this show the unofficial research and development show for Hollywood because the comic book properties are so hot right now. So many movies have been made, using... These comic books.
And science fiction movies that come out now kind of right afterwards have comic books. I mean, like the Alien and Predator, which big movies
yeah.
that come out.
I mean, look at iRobot from Isaac Asimov is based on a science fiction story.
Right, but I mean that the movies Aliens, after the movies, comic books came out.
Of course, they get their own comics.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, I sat on a couple of panels, Firefly and Farscape. Both, you know, Farscape has a comic. Firefly is getting a comic. The fans are just so big in the genre space, genre being science fiction, fantasy,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing that comic book people seem to be into. They're very much wanting more than just the television or movie. They want to see comics and books based off those properties. They want to see the story continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to see artwork. They want to put up websites. So all these guys gather at Comic-Con, and it's just amazing what you see. Movies that have been put out include Spider-Man, X-Men, Road to Perdition, Blade, Ghost World. Those are all based on comic books. This year, the studios are not only looking for new comic book properties from which they can make, you know, the next movies from, they were also showing off the movies that are currently in production. And some of those include Blade Trinity, which is the third Blade movie. Batman Begins, which is the fifth Batman movie, I think.
Sixth or seventh if you count the Adam West one.
Constantine, which is based off of a comic book called Hellblazer.
And on and on, right?
Yeah, Elektra, Sin City, Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four is going to be a movie?
Yes, possibly by I think it's in production right now. They've already cast it, so... I didn't go to the panel on Fantastic Four, but I hear it should be interesting. The guy who plays in The Shield, the television show,
mm-hmm.
is playing the Thing. And I know he was very adamant about it not being a digital character like the Hulk.
Well, that sounds good.
He wants to act.
I remember.
Imagine that.
Speaking of science fiction and such, and actually your photo log of the event, I recall when they were talking about The Lord of the Rings and how they weren't going to be doing The Hobbits digitally. And I'm like, well, how are you going to do that? They're talking about force perspective, and I didn't understand at that point.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, they're going to look all short and strange. And, of course, they look great, but they're very
yeah.
much
And I think that's why these movies are so successful, because the directors and the special effects people are so well, you know, they're able to suspend disbelief so well. You know, that you just get immersed in these environments, you know, these other worlds. And these movies are just amazing to watch.
What of the speeches and such that you went to, what impressed you?
It was great going to the Ray Bradbury panel. Ray Bradbury going on his 85th birthday. It's like the end of August. And this is a guy who is the grandfather of science fiction. You know, he wrote The Martian Chronicles and Fahrenheit 451, and Something Wicked This Way Comes, you know, and this is, and he's still alive and with us. And the guy is so sharp; he just doesn't hear very well, and he doesn't get around. He's pretty much stuck in a wheelchair at this mm-hmm. point. But the panel that I went to was in this huge room. It was pretty well packed, and they had lines of people standing. You know, waiting to ask him questions, and he didn't really ever hear the question. He had to kind of have to turn over to Mark Evanier, which mm-hmm. is one of the guys that was sitting up there with him, to repeat it. And once he got it, he's like, oh, you know, and he talked on and on. And he had some great advice for new writers.
Now, is Ray Bradbury still writing?
Yes, he is. In fact, he's still publishing. So that's the other amazing thing. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I mean, he defined the whole genre.
But yeah.
He's like Tolkien and Divine
Fantasy. And Isaac Asimov. Yeah, those guys. And Robert A. Heinlein. Yeah.
Did he have any input on what he thought of some of the movies that have come out, not based off his work, but work like iRobot or something like that? It's a traditional storyline made into a movie.
Did I walked in. I didn't walk in the beginning. He may have said something in the beginning, but I didn't catch it. When I walked in, he was pretty much talking about his books that he had written and advice that he was giving people. Some of the things he said were, don't, when you're writing science fiction, don't write science fiction. It'll never work because science fiction doesn't stand up over time. Technology advances so fast, science advances so fast that you'll never effectively write a real science fiction story about, technology without it dating quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He said the best science fiction stories are about myths and legends. Every science fiction story he has ever written about is either about myth or legend, except for Fahrenheit 451. And he's stymied why that it still does so well.
All right.
But he did say, somebody didn't put on the page, actually. He said he went back and watched it and realized that the librarian who plays the father in the movie is actually his father. He said he was crying his eyes out when he realized it.
Yeah.
And he says that if he were to go back and do anything to that now, it would have been to dedicate that to his father. So, yeah, a lot of little stories like that.
This program is supported by Grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the time is now to call us about anything. You can call us about comics and the Comic-Con that Sean went to last week, or in general about sci-fi. But, of course, we're open and available to your calls about computers and questions of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And, of course, you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and click on Send a Message.
This week on This American Life, we spend 24 hours from 5 a.m. to 5 a.m. the next morning at the Golden Apple, a diner in Chicago. The guys who hang out every day drinking coffee, the drunks who come in after the bars close, the owner who explains that the dessert sales have dropped 50% because the revolving pie case is busted.
It's supposed to be turning. It's not turning because the motor broke.
That's this week on This American Life.
This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This program is supported by a grant from CruiseIR, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're talking about Comic-Con, but you can call in about anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The Geeks this morning, Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. And Sean went to Comic-Con last week. Sean, you see any interesting awards shows?
Well, yeah, it's something I really wanted to talk about. Comic-Con also hosts the Eisner Awards. Will Eisner is what Ray Bradbury is to the science is to the comic world what Ray Bradbury is to the science fiction world. He is 87 years old now. Will Eisner, it's like he hasn't aged at all. It's just amazing this guy can get around, and a guy is sharp as a whip. What they do every year on pretty much in the middle of the show, it happens at night. It's basically the Oscars of the comic world.
And for comic books specifically.
For comic books, for graphic novels, and basically they give awards to best, art and writing and best archival work. There's a whole bunch of awards. And these awards are handed out by professionals in the field. And it's very much like the Oscars, except these guys don't dress as well a lot of times. And they get a lot of flack for that because this is the one thing that really sets – they're really hoping will legitimize comic books as a medium. But they take it very seriously, and it's amazing the stuff that gets nominated. I mean, this is not stuff you see at a typical comic book store. You really have to dig for it, and it's unfortunate. But Will Eisner was on hand to hand out awards. He was there. He's there every year. Sometimes he wins his own award, which he hates. He's like, come on, guys, you got to stop this, you know. But what's amazing is the guy keeps putting out awesome books, you know, and he keeps winning awards because of it. People like Neil Gaiman were there.
What does Neil Gaiman do?
Neil Gaiman wrote a book called American Gods, which was a national, it was a New York bestseller. It also won the Hugo Award.
No, this wasn't a comic book then.
That's a novel he wrote. But he also won he won an award for Sandman, which was a comic that was put out by Vertigo, owned by DC Comics. And Sandman has won some very big awards. It was a national book award of some sort that a comic book has never won. The keynote speaker was Michael Chabon. He won the Pulitzer for Cavalier and Clay about 2 years ago. He also does comic books, too, based on that book. And the book is about Jack Kirby, who is the guy who, you know, from Marvel Comics, who drew the early Fantastic Four and, I mean, put faces to all of the Marvel characters, Spider-Man and X-Men, Hulk, all those.
Now, if you're listening right now and you don't understand comics, if you don't really get the whole comic thing, comics have really matured since the early days of Spider-Man, Batman, and Superman.
In fact, they've matured so much, that's what Michael Chabon's keynote speech was about.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the problem right now is there aren't any good kids for comics for kids.
Yeah.
He said he's got he had a 7-year-old kid there with him, and he said that we've gotten to the point now. It's just like the movies, really hand in hand. The movies are so realistic now. I mean, if you look at the comic book based properties like the X-Men and they're not kids movies, and that's what's happening in the comic book world. They're not kids comics. I love them.
Right.
You know, they're very adult-oriented,
adult,
and they've got some great stories and stuff you will never see in the movies because they just can't do that kind of a stuff. And the things that people can draw are just amazing.
The drawing art form, I mean, you don't see that in the movie.
But you're just not seeing enough comics for kids anymore, and that was a big problem he had. So he was really trying to get the all the creators who were there, and there were a lot of them.
Now, Sean, I want to give you some props, if I can use the colloquial. When I was a kid, of course, I did comic books. Most kids, I think, to some degree, pick up comic books at some point. But as an adult, I really didn't get into comic books. I knew they were there, and I had friends that were really into them, but I wasn't really into them at all. And went with you up to Comic Relief in Berkeley, which is one of the best.
Yeah, my favorite comic store.
And, of course, was on the floor at Comic-Con. And the owner there, Roy, said, you know, you don't read comic books, you have to read this book. And I suggest this strongly. The book is Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. It's kind of gives you an idea of what this art form, and if you go along with McCloud's ideas, it definitely is an art form. It's an ancient form of mixing visual representations with text, and it's a big genre. It's a massive thing. And the interesting thing is the internet really plays in well with comics. The growth of the internet is going to grow comics because you see a lot more of imagery with text, and that's
right.
Sequentially, is a comic.
It's a very powerful medium. I mean, it's very different than books. That's my true passion. My true passion is novels.
Mm-hmm.
I love reading a good book because you just can't put pictures to a good book. But comics are interesting. They're different. You know, you've got one person who's giving you his vision or a collaborative effort, and they pull off some really amazing things, you know. And
if you're interested, Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. We're going to go right to the phones now because, you know, that's what we're here for, help you out. And if you'd like to join up and call, like Robert from Santa Cruz did, you're welcome to do so now. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Robert, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks. How are you guys doing?
Quite well, thank you. What's your question?
Good. It's about an iMac computer.
Okay.
And it's a computer actually that someone was getting rid of, and I just thought I'd try to play with it and see what's going on with it. And it's one of the older original iMacs, so it's the very first iMac.
So is it a colored one? Rainbow one? Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's the kind with the sort of drawer CD.
Okay, right.
So when I turn it on, I get, rather than the usual interface or graphical interface, I get like a command line interface. It's like DOS.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it says default cache, and then there's a bunch of stuff after it.
There's no little screen, like a little sad Mac screen?
No.
Okay, that's really strange. Do you have the disk that came with it?
There's a disk inside it's the Mac OS 9 install disk.
Okay. When you boot the machine, hold down the C key on your keyboard. and it should boot from that CD. And then you should get a prompt to install the operating system, and go ahead and do that.
Okay, so I turn it off and then hold the C key down and turn it on again?
Yeah, you can power it up, and right after you push the power button, then move your hand up to the keyboard, hold down the C key. Okay?
Okay, just the C key.
That's right, and it will boot from the CD.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert, for the
call.
All
right, thank you.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so we also got a few minutes ago, I mentioned Matthew, who wants to build a laptop, and I did a quick Google search on building a laptop and build your own laptop, and I found an interesting article on Legit Reviews, and that's legitreviews.com, and they have under reviews section, they call it White Box 1, building your own notebook, and it looks like they use an Asus manufacturer, and they talk about, can you build your own notebook? Yes, you can. How you do it?
You know, interesting is a lot of motherboards are highly integrated. The video is built onto it, All your connectivity features. So the thing is you can't put a card in the slots.
Right.
Because then it's not going to be thin anymore.
And you've got to get a really good power supply. It's problematic. And, of course, Motherboards, traditionally desktop motherboards, aren't the same kind of power configurations as notebook power.
No, and the processor requires cooling, so if you get something really fast, you're going to have to put a big heat sink and fan on it.
Or clock it down severely.
Yeah, or find some way to cool it.
So, again, if you're interested in building your own laptop, go ahead and go to Google and say, put in building your own notebook or laptop, and you should find...
But if you look around for embedded motherboards, there are a lot of motherboards out there that are meant for embedded, which means that they're lower speed, smaller designs, typically about 1 gigahertz. You probably find something that'll work just fine.
Now, if you don't know what the heck we're talking about with all this, you know, motherboards and all that nature, but you just have a problem with your computer, we're here to help you out. So give us a ring if you'd like, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to the internet and use geekspeak.org as the domain name, and click on the Geeks and click on Send a Message, fill it out, and we'll respond to that. Sean, did you see any interesting computer games at Comic-Con?
Oh my God, there's so many computer games there. All the big houses are there. Activision, Atari. I was just amazed by the number of games. And you got to understand, though, they're not all PC or... I didn't see any Macintoshes at all.
Okay.
They're not all PC games. In fact, they're very few. They're mostly PlayStation 2. A few Xboxes. And I think I saw one or two PC games. One of them that really stood out was called Dragon Shard Wars. And it's due out November of this year. And it's basically, it's a lot like Baldur's Gate. It's an RPG, which is a role-playing game, with real-time strategy aspects, mm-hmm. like Warcraft 3, where you have to manage resources. Except you build a city, but you don't manage resources very heavy, because that detracts from you going out and adventuring. So basically, the RTS aspects have to do with building a city. So if you build...
RTS?
That's what I said, real-time strategy.
Oh, sorry, I missed that.
So real-time strategy says you have a bunch of workers, they go mine wood, you need wood to build something. You have to gather resources before you can actually build, and you keep doing that. Well, in role-playing games where you actually have a group of adventurers and they go out on the adventure, you can't do both, really, because you don't have time. What this does is you build a city, and depending on where you actually place things, so if you build a barracks next to an alchemist, the troops who are made from that barracks will have some sort of a magic resistance. That sort of a thing. Or if you build an armory next to the barracks, they'll be a little stronger. So the RTS aspects have more to do with a little
structure.
Thought up front. Yeah, and other things that were really interesting about that, it was just a beautiful game.
And this game is called...
Structures fall down, walls fall down on characters. So you got to be careful about what you send in. You know, there are...
And what's the name of this game?
It's called Dragon Shard Wars from Atari. Usually you have one little screen in the bottom corner that you can see the world on. Well, this has two, because there's an underworld, too.
Right.
And if you're fighting forces on the land, you can actually send people underground to outflank them. So there's a lot of strategy elements as well, and I can go on and on, but look for the article in the next week.
We're such geeks.
Yeah.
Chip from King City, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I have a question. I have a problem with my computer. I think it's been affected by something called the Trojan virus.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that one?
A Trojan is actually a generic term for a certain type of application or virus that gets on your machine. But so you think you might have a Trojan. It's a class of things.
Yeah, well, that's what I was told. And I was trying to find the best way to get rid of it. Doesn't allow me to use my Netscape Navigator.
Okay.
All right. So I'm trying to find the best way to get rid of it.
Do you have any virus protection software?
Yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff on there. But what, it just slipped through.
Okay. Do a full system scan. Make sure to update your virus protection software. Make sure you know. Do an update to get your new definitions. What virus?
Okay.
What protection software are you using?
Oh gosh, I can't remember what it's called right offhand.
Okay. Well, if it's a good one, it'll have an update definitions. Run that application. Update the definitions. After you've done that, do a full system scan. It will find any Trojans you have on your machine. Now you might have thing called spyware kind of stuff, and that's there's a whole genre of applications that run on your machine that could technically be a legit application, so it's not really a virus.
Yeah, well, what it does, I think, is it I've put in some, it loads in some new files, and then it won't let you take those files out because you're using that.
Well, that sounds like a virus.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
No,
anyway,
what viruses is you can't just update your definitions and take care of the virus because the virus is already loaded on your system.
Exactly.
So
most virus protection software will find the virus on your system.
Typically, you need some sort of a safe disk, something you created early on.
Possibly.
Like a CD, a bootable CD.
How do you know that you have a virus?
Because I can't use my application stuff.
What happens when you try to launch it?
Everything boots up fine, except for when I want to access the internet, and then I'm not allowed to. It won't.
What does it say when you try to open?
Get that message from Microsoft that says we're unable to access at this time or something. And I says, well, reboot your computer, and then when you reboot it, it comes up with the same message.
Okay,
a loop.
I would suggest putting in your Windows disks and reinstalling your operating system.
Okay, well, we'll try that.
Yeah, I would go with that. And then make sure that you have your virus definitions are good. But you can't update your virus definitions if you can't connect. So
do you have to...
Give it a shot.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, Sean, what was your thought process?
I'm wondering if maybe his settings are not set.
Well, it seems like if it just happened, though, that it was probably caused by
could be
virus. Well, we're going to go with Mary in SoCal. Mary, your question, comment, concern?
Hi. Hi. I have an iMac Graphite. And the monitor just went, it's just gotten really dark. It's like gray. You could hardly see any of the icons on the desktop.
And you tried to change the settings in the monitor settings?
Yeah.
And it's as bright as possible and it's still like that?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's fixable.
It's going to cost you, but you got to find someone that knows monitors and will actually open an iMac. The iMac, the older iMacs like that, the color and the graphite ones, are really hard to open. I've opened one before, and it just was a nightmare to open.
Oh.
And basically any CRT or television repair company could theoretically do it for you, assuming that it's not something that's catastrophic, like the tube is bad. You know, if it's something that can
it's
be replaced.
Typically not the tube.
On a dark screen, what is that normally?
It could be a transistor or something that's going out on the back.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a problem with watering the plant on top of
a television.
A television, yeah. And it blew the television, could smell smoke, everything. Thought it was dead. Held on to it for years. Took it in, got it fixed. The tube is sealed, completely sealed.
Right.
Most of the problems happen with chips outside of it.
Right. So, yeah, you can get this fixed, but you're going to have to find someone that will do it, and that's going to be the difficulty, I think.
All right. Can I ask you another question?
Please.
In iPhoto, if you make, like, in the main library, I have not figured out how to organize my photos, and we have, like, a million of them. But if I make, like, a new library file for, like, things I want to print or whatever, if I just throw that file away after I finish printing them, will they throw away the pictures in the main library also?
No.
Okay.
The thing on the side, the left list that has the called albums, those are just categorization things. You can delete that whenever you want. The images won't be touched.
Oh, okay,
good. And if the images were to be touched for some reason, it's going to prompt you first. So you just,
Do you have any suggestions for categorizing or organizing in iPhoto?
iPhoto is a pretty good application. There's some good books out there that are kind of talk a little bit more about the feature sets of them. But in general, No, I don't have a lot of good suggestions. I definitely would suggest keeping kind of a date of the photo collection. Like, if you've got all your photos in May, you know, you have a folder for 2004 May. And then now that's just a categorization of ways to find them, but it doesn't actually move anything around that way. And then just do that. But then also, of course, it's kind of nice to, you know, if you have birthday parties, have a folder of birthday parties. I'm hoping soon that iPhoto will have subdirectories so that you can have a folder that's called birthdays, and then you can list all the different parties you've been to that are all folders. But right now, they still don't have that feature, which is kind of frustrating. There is ways also to kind of save your library collection settings and then load a new one, but using the same images, which allows you to have... But it gets pretty complicated. I would recommend date-based and also categorization-based of different things. You can also rename the file names and do finds off the file names. Uh-huh. And some people, like, prepend different codes to the image name, like, BP for a birthday party or something of that nature.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
And Richard from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. A friend of mine suggested that I add some 3D to my power to my Windows 2002 XP.
Okay.
And so I bought an NVIDIA GeForce FX and disabled my Graphics Pro Savage that came with the computer.
Uh-huh.
And some things did turn up that I hadn't seen. Well, I usually just play games with the computer, but mm-hmm. Some things turned up that I hadn't seen before, and I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. But one of the problems is that ever since I got it, the screen turns red or dims or turns pink at intervals. And
okay.
Sometimes it'll last for 20, 30 minutes, but a lot of the times it just is fine. But
okay. I think the problem with the that coloring thing is that your cables aren't tightened down enough.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? Because I'm remembering back when we were playing StarCraft where I would end up a pink screen, and that was video drivers.
Yeah, you could be video drivers.
You end up with a completely...
First, definitely check that you're...
Which card is this again?
What?
Which video card is this?
This is the NVIDIA GeForce FX 5200.
You might want to get the
video. It's video 228 PCI series.
Okay.
I've got to say one other thing. I thought I wanted to know whether this could possibly affect it. I upgraded my number of chips or number of memory
uh-huh.
to 520 supposedly, but when I checked on the computer, it's 496. So one of the cards I put in is like 12 or 24 short. I wondered if that would be enough to affect this
okay,
problem.
Okay, wait a second. There's a few things going on here. First off, when you said you disabled your original video card,
yeah.
did you pull that video card out of your machine?
No.
Is it built onto the motherboard?
No, it's in a slot.
Okay.
And in the instructions it said just disable it. And so I've got the thing showing where it shows everything in my computer, and it's got a little red X on it.
See, that is the weirdest instructions I've heard, to get a new video card and disable your old one. That's like, why not just pull your old one? And then the new card you got was a PCI card?
Yeah.
Okay. That's really strange configuration. What I would have done...
Are you using multi-monitors?
What?
Are you using more than one monitor?
No. Just
okay. What I would have done... any of us would have done is pulled that original card and got a new AGP card, new graphics card, and put that into the slot, just replaced it. Having the same old one in there and disabled, it's just going to cause problems for you. So I really highly recommend turning your power off, your computer down, opening it back up, and pulling that old card out. And since you bought a PCI, you can't put the card into your AGP slot, which is where your current video card is in.
Right.
And you should, because it's actually better that way, but you have the wrong card for that.
Yeah.
So pull your old card out, definitely.
Yeah.
That's going to start solving problems.
So if you're gaming on that PCI card, you're not going to get as...
No.
It's not going to be as good a gaming experience.
Yeah.
The bandwidth on a PCI slot is much, much less than the AGP.
So basically what we're saying is that AGP slot your current video card is in, that slot, is actually special, and that's good for 3D graphics. Because
AGP is Advanced Graphics Port.
Right. So buying a card that doesn't use that port, and it being the 3D card, is not right.
So I bought the wrong card?
Yes.
If you still can, take it back and get an AGP card.
Assuming that you have an AGP slot, which I'm assuming you do.
An AGP card.
Currently, your computer, when you look in it, the old video card versus the new one, if the slots are different that they plug into, the old one is an AGP.
So all the white slots that look the same, that's PCI. There should be another slot that's offset a little, usually a darker color, and it's closer to the processor. That's the AGP slot.
And currently, your old video card is in it.
Ah.
And what speed is your processor?
Oh, you got me there.
Is it old? Is that we're talking 3 or 4 years old? Or is it newer?
It's a 2002 model.
Oh, yeah, then you probably have AGP.
Yeah, so you want to pull out the old video card, buy a new AGP video card to put in that slot.
But I think we're still going ahead of ourselves.
Or what about just switching the card that I have and putting that in that slot, in the old slot?
It probably won't fit, yeah.
Oh.
Now, Miles is saying that we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. First off, if you don't want to go and do more expensive buying a new card and throwing away the other two cards, which would be silly, you could just do dual monitor support. Go ahead and re-enable that first card. It's going to be a lot of problems. But
now,
to solve your current
Before you do that, you need to go to NVIDIA.com
and
download their latest drivers. And their new 6 Series drivers just came out.
And you want to get that for that card currently
don't
have.
Don't use the drivers that come for the manufacturer of the video card. So go to NVIDIA and get their drivers.
Oh, okay.
Basically, when you bought your video card, you also got a CD and that had the drivers.
Yeah.
Those are old by the
those
time
are
the CD
really
gets
old.
To your home. So
right.
You want to go ahead and get the most recent, and that will probably solve your problems.
And also, you might want to check your video cable because the pins, the pin for your red gun or blue gun, whatever, may not be reaching into the card far enough.
It might have gotten bent or more damaged.
I'm sorry, we've just hit you with an avalanche.
Well, what about that thing about the being 24 short on the memory?
That's just
the way that
it's just the way the count was done. It's not necessarily a difference in size. It's a question of counting in a base 10 versus a base 2 system.
Yeah. Believe me, if the memory wasn't working, your system would not work.
Yeah,
you guys are amazing. You know that. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call.
Bye,
Richard.
You know, sometimes I wonder if we just started pulling out a random dictionary and pulling out just geek terms at random, if it would still sound as smart.
I know. Just because you can't understand us doesn't mean we're smart.
We'd only be confusing a few people,
Robert, welcome back.
Hi there.
Hi, Robert. You're calling back?
Yeah, I'm calling back. I tried what you said, and the Mac that iMac started to boot up, and then it stopped. At first gray Mac OS 9.2 screen, which is Welcome to Mac OS, and it just stopped there. And as I've been waiting on the phone just now, once in a while I hear the CD drive start up. It's as though it's trying to do something, and it stops again.
Okay, it could be that your CD drive is not operating correctly, so it can't read the disk completely. Make sure the disk is clean. If that doesn't work, if you have a CD cleaner for audio, CD cleaners, what they basically are is a CD with a little brush on the bottom of it.
Uh-huh.
You can go ahead and put that in the machine and have it spin a few times. There might be some dust on the top of that head.
On the laser.
Oh, actually, since you have a tray mount on your iMac, go ahead and when you open that up, you'll see a little lens. Clean that with, you just need to get dust off of it, basically. It's probably not dirty. It's probably just a little bit of dust on it. And that's what's happening is the CD's not being read well. That's a possibility. Another possibility is that the memory is bad or the hard drive is bad on the machine and you just won't be able to do what you want to do.
Uh-huh.
But give that a shot first.
Okay, and if that's the case, that it's not the CD drive but the memory or something like that, is the computer pretty much shot?
No, you could replace the memory. You could try to troubleshoot a little bit. Those the color ones, the memory is even hard to get to. There's no little port. The graphite iMacs actually have a port in the back, but the color ones don't. So it'll be hard to switch monitor, but I'm assuming that it's not the problem. I would go, and since you're a Windows user and you have other machines in the house, definitely use Google when you're doing this kind of thing. Do searches on iMacs and try to find a little bit more about what's problematic.
Oh, maybe confuse me with somebody else. I'm not a PC user.
Oh, I'm sorry. iMac, is it a graphite or it's color, right?
Yeah.
It's an old color that you picked up.
Old original. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, definitely clean. Try to brush off the CD lens, if you will, and make sure your disk is clean and try that whole event again.
Okay, so there's no way to turn it off. So I just have to unplug it.
Oh, no. You can hold the power button, push it down, and hold it for, I think, 5 seconds or like that. It will turn off.
Oh, okay, because it wouldn't.
But just don't push that button in too far because you can break it and then it'll be damaged and it'll be problematic. So just hold it.
Okay.
Push it a little bit and hold it. Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Robert.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take one more call, which we barely have time for. Donna in San Juan Bautista, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
What's your question?
I'm looking for the cheapest, easiest, fastest way to back up my hard drive on a continuing basis. Something I can plug in and just dump it.
We all are.
That's true. How big is your hard drive?
It's only 30 gigs, and it's 58% free.
Oh, and are your Windows or Macintosh?
It's Windows.
All right. I would get a FireWire or USB drive. External USB drive, and get some software. Sean, what do you suggest for good software for backup PC backups?
Oh, God. Backup My PC is
pretty good. Backup My PC, yeah. So get
there are a bunch of them.
Get the application called Backup My PC and get an external USB drive and run with it.
Backup
you know, don't worry
my
about
PC. I mean, is there a brand of this USB drive?
No.
You know what? I wouldn't waste your time trying to back up Windows. It's just not worth it. It's such a headache. And if you have your Windows disks, you can reinstall it any time. Just back up your critical files.
Oh.
And if that's the case, you can probably get a DVD burner or even
I'll
a CD burner. Yeah. Really, don't waste your time backing up Windows.
Do this. Make sure all of your documents that you use are in one specific place, and you can back them up to CD, and just keep track of what documents are important to you and always keep copies of them.
Yeah, like the My Documents folder.
That's how we all do it.
You start with that first, and then look at backing up Windows.
I've got programs they don't have disks for, so I want to back them up.
Yeah,
so I don't want to have to try and separate them out with how they are interfacing with Windows. So I do just want to dump the whole thing. It's not that big.
Right. Unfortunately, that's... Yeah, well, you can do the same thing. You can copy your entire Windows thing, but use Backup My PC. And unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're not going to be able to continue that conversation. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak.
Good to be here.
And all of you that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Arturo, or on the web at kusp.org. Fine Print with Rick Kleffel is coming up right now.